A tsunami versus 1,000 cute little kitties. The outcome may surprise you. I'm Torrin Atkinson.
Public service announcement. Giving up hope might actually save your life. I'm Joe Fulgham.
Dateline Spain. Lost city of Atlantis uncovered. We guarantee it. I'm Kevin Leeson, and this is Caustic Soda.
Tsunami.
What's a tsunami?
As Kevin aptly sounded out for us.
It's like God flushing a toilet.
It's a big wave. Mm-hmm. A tsunami is a series of water waves caused by the displacement of a large volume of a body of water, typically on an ocean or a large lake. Earthquakes, volcanic eruptions, and other underwater explosions, including detonations of underwater nuclear devices. Landslides, glacier calvings, and meteorite impacts, and all sorts of other disturbances above or below. You'd need to be pretty darn overweight,
I think. An entire polar bear club cannonballing simultaneously.
Right. Pretty much if you can cause a rapid displacement of a large, large amount of water, you're going to get a tsunami.
Now, what's a poonami?
Poonami is what I had during the break in the previous episode.
Oh, okay.
Rather not talk much about it.
Yeah, that's what you get in Mexico sometimes.
The word tsunami comes from the Japanese, which is composed of two kanji, su meaning harbor, and nami meaning wave. So it's a harbor wave. The term tidal wave is actually a bit of a misnomer. It's called that because tsunami waves don't resemble normal sea waves. Their wavelength is so long that they're actually out in the deep ocean, they're fairly flat, so they don't appear as a breaking wave until they actually enter the shallow water. So they call them tidal waves because they appear to just be a shifting tide when they're out in the deeper waves.
Mm-hmm.
Harbor wave because they
you don't see them till they reach the harbor.
They reach the harbor. Right. As a matter of fact, there are stories of Japanese fishermen heading out to sea to go fish, not even noticing that a big tsunami went past them out in the deep water, and then coming back to their villages, which are completely destroyed
right
by the wave. Yeah.
Imanami.
Imanami. Sounds like something I ordered at a Japanese restaurant. It's a little peas. It's a little salty peas,
yes,
right?
Yes, imanami are the salty peas.
Mm-hmm.
As we know, nami means wave and imi means purification.
Oh, purification.
Ooh,
wave.
I like that.
Also known as colloquially as a mega tsunami. A tsunami that has an initial wave heights that are much larger than normal tsunamis. Unlike usual tsunamis, which originate from tectonic activity and the raising or lowering of seafloor, known mega tsunamis have originated from large-scale landslides or impact events.
Mm. Uh-huh. Yeah, I saw a show on the Discovery Channel about on this very subject.
Okay.
Like, I don't even know, probably 7 or 8 years ago. It talked about how in Alaska there was a piece of a cliff fell into the
yes.
water and it wiped out a village.
Yeah.
And there's this island like just off of Spain that is kind of splitting in half. And they're mm-hmm. afraid that one half of the island is going to fall into the ocean and create a mega tsunami big enough to wipe out the eastern seaboard of the United States.
Okay. Yeah, the Lituya Bay mega tsunami, quote
uh-huh.
unquote. From 1958, an earthquake of magnitude 7.7 caused 90 million tons of rock and ice to drop into the deep water of the head of Lituya Bay. The block fell almost vertically, hit the water with sufficient force to create a wave approximately 1,719 feet high.
Yeah. Yeah, and it was in like an incredibly short amount of space, too. Like, it almost
yeah.
was from like one side of a bay mm-hmm. to the other side of the bay, and happened in the middle of the night, and people just kind of like there were very few survivors.
Two heights are sometimes quoted for mega tsunamis, the height of the wave itself in water and the height to which it washes when it reaches land,
mm-hmm.
which, depending on the locale, can be several times larger. The asteroid which created the Chicxulub crater in the Yucatan 65 million years ago would have generated mega tsunamis as high as 3 kilometers.
Yeah, that 3,000 meters.
Enough to completely inundate even large islands such as Madagascar.
Well, it did go so far as to wipe out the dinosaurs. They think that that's the meteorite strike that did
probably
it.
Probably wasn't the mega tsunami that
no.
did it, though.
It was no. the ashen cloud and material and particulate that went into the air and blacked out the sun and, you know, made it impossible to breathe and rained fire down on everything.
And they say that there was a mega tsunami at the Vajont Dam in 1963 in Venice, Italy.
Oh, yeah.
Or just north of Venice, Italy. One of the tallest dams in the world, 860 feet high. Its 1963 overtopping was caused when the designers ignored the geological instability of Monte Toc on the southern side of the basin.
You know, that sounds like something that you probably shouldn't ignore if you're an architect or an engineer. when you're building a dam.
I could see how you could kind of forget it. You know, there's a big mountain there. Who cares? Whatever. I'm not saying they were right to do it, but I'm just saying it's understandable to not think maybe that will fall down.
I bet you geologists, they do this all the time. It's like, this is in geological terms. We speak in thousands of years, all right? This dam's going to last like 100. Don't worry about it.
Well, throughout the summer of 1960, minor landslides and earth movements were noticed. However, instead of heeding warning signs, the Italian government chose to sue the handful of journalists reporting the problems for undermining the social order. And the dam's engineers themselves reported results of model-based experiments on the effects of further landslides, which predicted a devastating disaster. So then, in 1963,
here it comes.
At 10:39 p.m., October 9th, the combination of drawing down the reservoir and heavy rains triggered a landslide of about 260 million cubic meters of forest, earth, and rock, which fell into the reservoir at up to 110 kilometers per hour. The resulting displacement of water caused 50 million cubic meters of water to overtop the dam in a 820-foot-high wave.
Oh, nice.
The flooding in the valley destroyed five villages, killing about 2,000 people.
Hmm. Which would bring about, we haven't mentioned this yet, the phobia. Cymophobia or chymophobia is right. The fear of waves or wave-like motions.
All right. I don't suffer from this. I don't have it.
No, I don't look at a wave and go, eek.
This seems like a relatively rare phobia.
I would think so, but you know, people are afraid of all sorts of things. Some people are just afraid of going outside.
I bet you everyone who has one of these has been in a tsunami. Mm.
Yeah, maybe that could be.
Just watch a lot of disaster films.
Or maybe you have a fear of water, and then on top of that, you're like, but if it's moving, that's even worse.
Yeah.
Okay, so I've got a pop quiz before we go into any more of these details.
Sure.
Because we're going to probably reveal some of these details as we talk about more. Okay. I think you're going to get the first one. Pop quiz is going to be about the top 10 death tolls from tsunami.
Okay.
So number one, I think you're probably going to know.
Chicxulub crater?
No.
No. Okay. It's the 2004. This is the 2004
Kevin's
tsunami.
Kevin's got it right, yeah.
Off of Sumatra
that
wiped out.
The Indian Ocean tsunami in 2004, yeah. Estimates from 230 to 310,000 deaths.
Yeah, I mean, this is the one where you can actually find aerial photos, and I'm sure we'll put one on the website at causticsodapodcast.com, where you could see before and after satellite photos of communities and small islands, where it's not just that, you know, all the structures have been leveled. Like, literally, half of these islands would disappear and be washed away into the sea. Like, they'd no longer exist.
Yeah.
And so, it was a 9.1 magnitude earthquake that caused it. I even heard once, and I don't know how true this is, that it actually...
Godzilla was disturbed.
It interrupted, like, the spin of the Earth, right? That there was, like, a hiccup seismically.
Yeah, well, all earthquakes will do that. I think we talked about that in our earthquakes episode.
Could be.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so number two. So now we know what the top is, 230,000. Right. What is the second most deadly tsunami on record? Does anybody know?
I'm guessing.
Or you can just guess a number if you want.
A number of deaths?
A number of deaths.
Seeing as how it's a Japanese name, I'm guessing that most of these things happen to Japan.
They seem to receive the most number of tsunamis.
Or maybe they're just the guys who write about it, going, we just got hit by another one.
Yeah,
as opposed to some little island in in the Indian Ocean that just gets wiped off the map.
In these things, usually the worst one is like twice as worse as the second worst one.
Yeah.
So I'm going to say like maybe 200,000 deaths tops.
Okay. I like the way you're going with that, but I'm going to go even further. I'm going to say like 100,000.
All right. So Kevin's probably better. 123,000. Right. It was the 1908 Messina, that's in Italy, earthquake and tsunami.
Oh, it made me a liar already, yeah, right out of the gate. I totally thought it was going to be in Japan.
Yeah. Big Mediterranean Ocean tsunami.
And what year was it again?
1908.
Oh, wow. Okay.
That was before they even had measurements.
But 20th century, so.
Yeah, they had a hard time counting that high without computers. Okay.
There are lots of people out there. Now you count to 10, and then you count to 10, and when you're done, come to me.
We've got 1,000 people who've counted to 100. All right, number three.
I'm still going with Japan. I'm going to go with Japan again.
Okay.
And I'm going to go, last one was 120, so I'm going to go 80.
I'm going to go 90.
All right, Torrin's closer to 100,000.
Yeah!
It was the 1755 Lisbon earthquake,
holy
tsunami,
Jesus.
And fire.
How come?
All together at once?
Yeah. Well, of course, the one
the
caused
killer
the two
combo.
Others.
The triple threat.
Yeah, which came first? First came the fire, and then came the tsunami. Whew!
And the fourth most deadly tsunami? Any guesses on how big that
two
was
people
or where
died.
It was?
No, 60.
This is almost too bad because we're counting down, so you guys can't. But I knew you'd get number one. It was actually 40,000.
Uh-huh.
This is an estimate because this was in the second millennium BCE. So
okay.
2000.
BCE stands for before Christ, everybody?
Yeah, something like that.
Okay.
So this was in Greece. It was the Minoan eruption, a huge eruption, and they estimate about 40,000 people died.
Oh, Minos.
And then number five. It's very close. You're going to have to, it's in the 30,000s, so I'm going to give you that.
Okay.
30 what?
36.
Torn gets it. Bam.
Wow, right on.
This was the 1883 eruption of Krakatoa.
Krakatoa, Krakatoa, Krakatoa.
Now I know that that's an onomatopoeia.
Krakatoa!
It could be. I got a couple of facts on tsunami, now that we're done our pop quiz. 80% of tsunamis occur in the Pacific Ocean.
Mm. Okay.
And you could guess that...
And yet all, like, three out of the top five deadliest were, like, all in the Mediterranean.
Because they're saving it up.
Yeah. Well,
they probably have more concentration.
More highly populated. That's what it's got to be, yeah.
Well, of course
they
do.
And they're weaker and easier to kill.
Of course they do. When you have more tsunami, each one kills less. But overall...
People know to move out of that part of the island.
That too. Yeah. That's right. Well, this is getting ahead of it. But in the 2004 one, a lot of the video, you can see the ocean being pulled back to signify that the tsunami's coming in.
Mm-hmm.
And all the locals start running.
Yeah.
And all the tourists go, oh, that's kind of peculiar. What's going
on? Let's go see what we can see. We'll see if there's any crabs in there.
Something funny's going on with the ocean.
This is like when you're out in the forest and you see a bunch of animals running the opposite direction. Yeah. You're like,
you know that
sure
the Tasmanian devil's right behind them.
Yeah. Yeah. Or Elmer Fudd, one or the other.
I think Goodness gracious, a big wall of water.
I think if that were ever actually to happen to me, I would turn tail and run and be like, fuck, I'm going to ride a deer out of here.
How long would it take you to see all these animals just in terror, just running, and you hear a noise? I'm going to run. I think I'm going to run. Here I go. I'm running. I don't know what I'm running from.
I'm a tough guy.
Those deer spook easily.
They do indeed, but...
But they have a wisdom about them.
Deer wisdom.
You look in the eye of a deer and you're like, you get it. You understand that a massive wall of water is something to be avoided.
Joe is the deer whisperer.
That's right. Tell me about the tsunami. And as mentioned, if the first part of a tsunami to reach land is a trough, waves will often have a trough in front of them. So you've got the big buildup of the wave. And because of the physics of it, I don't know all the details, but you'll get this dip in front of it where the water level is actually lower. And because tsunamis' wavelengths are so massive, up to 2 kilometer wavelength, meaning the distance between each peak, up to 2 kilometers, that trough can also be massive. And so when that wave reaches land, before it does, the trough does. And so the water level at the shore will actually recede and shrink out into the ocean.
You can totally see video of this from 2004 in a lot of these like coastal communities and resort communities right on the beaches, where all of a sudden the beach goes from being like 20 feet wide to like a kilometer wide. Like you can see practically out into the ocean. You're like, the horizon is all beach now, and here comes something that you don't want to be on the beach for.
Also, as we've mentioned, tsunami are not just one wave.
Yeah,
there are often very many, and the largest might not even be the first one that hits.
It's like an earthquake and aftershocks.
And in several of these massive death-causing tsunamis, the first one would hit, and the horrible destruction would happen, and then it would recede back into the ocean, which unfortunately would pull people into the ocean.
Right.
Yeah.
Many people would go, my goodness, that's horrible.
Let's go
down and find the injured. Let's see what happened. This was really interesting. And then the second wave comes in and hits all those people.
Right.
So sometime in February 1933, the U.S. Navy oil tanker USS Ramapo was steaming through a nasty Pacific gale when she encountered a massive wave. She escaped with minor damage. Geometric calculations showed the wave to have been 112 feet tall. Hmm. To this day, it remains the tallest wind-driven wave ever recorded.
Hmm.
Okay.
Estimations by oceanographers suggest that the tallest height possible for a wind-driven wave is 198 feet, which would take a freakishly rare combination of events and geography to produce such a monster.
Yeah.
A perfect storm, perhaps?
Yes.
You should TM that and write a movie about it. That sounds like a really dramatic thing to have to face.
Yeah, I know,
a perfect storm.
Wow.
A wave of that size could severely damage or sink any ship unfortunate enough to encounter it. Modern oil drilling platforms are not designed to withstand such a wave.
No. When you do these things, when you create things that have to deal with these natural disasters, somebody has to run the math, right?
Yeah.
And you can't say that these
things...
We call
them nerds, Joe.
Right. You can't say that these things are impossible. Like, it is impossible for an earthquake to hit here that would cause this and we'd have to deal with it. But you start doing the math and going, well, this is a once every 10,000 years thing. Let's not worry about it. And as we'll talk about later with the Japan thing, sometimes, you know, you get those really, really unlucky instances mm-hmm. that you just, it would have been ridiculous to prepare for.
Right.
Water wings.
Water wings can prepare. But, I mean, are you going to carry around water wings just in case?
If when I'm visiting Japan.
What about if you're visiting Vancouver? We might actually get a tsunami here from something.
Say what?
There was one in Port Alberni a little while ago.
That's what I hear. Mm-hmm. Do we have anything on that?
1964.
Oh, okay. That's not hit so long ago.
Hit by two tsunamis.
Oh, wow.
During the Good Friday earthquake. The water rose 1 foot a minute, reaching 10 feet above the high water mark.
Or the not so good Friday earthquake.
Yeah, about 375 homes were damaged, 55 washed away. No injuries or fatalities.
How can you wash away 55 homes and have no injuries or fatalities?
The homes floated, so everybody in them just got picked up later.
They're houseboats. That's right. Everyone lives on houseboats in that community.
Well, the people of Port Alberni are a tough and hardy stock. They just all swam back.
Or none of them actually live in their homes?
The worst thing was they got annoyed because their cigarettes got put out by the wave.
It watered down their Crown Royal.
I'm going to have to dry this out before I can relight it. God damn it. 1 mile to swim back to shore.
They were, yeah, they held their cocktails like over their head and swam one-handed,
their
right?
Beer cans, yeah.
Yeah, the only tsunami to kill people in Canada was in 1929 off the coast of Newfoundland. And that tsunami became called the Great Big Sea.
The oldest evidence of a tsunami that I could find out in not necessarily living memory, but when humans would have been around,
yeah.
was an 8,000-year-ago tsunami caused by a volcano near Mount Etna, causing it to avalanche in Sicily. That avalanche crashed into the sea at an estimated 200 miles an hour that triggered a tsunami that spread across the entire Mediterranean Sea.
This is like the fun things that geologists get to do is they look for sediment and stuff that is like where places where it doesn't belong. And they do all that, like they back time it and blah, 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 and like match it to other like sedimentary deposits.
They get to do all sorts of like measurements and then they get to do math on that to calculate things. And that's exactly what it did because there are no historical records of the event. We had no history at the time. No written history. Yeah.
We call it science.
Well, geological records, but they did do that math. And they have determined that the tsunami going through the Mediterranean was taller than a 10-story building.
Wow.
How many feet in the story?
About 10. So 100-foot tall waves.
Yeah, through the Mediterranean Sea.
Through the Mediterranean, which is not... How deep does the Mediterranean get? I don't know.
Probably relatively deep, but it's, you know, in grand schemes and sea, like, language. It's not particularly...
Sea language?
Yeah. You know, in sea talk, it's not particularly voluminous.
Okay, I found it. It's got an average depth of basically 1.5 kilometers, and its deepest recorded point is a little over 5 kilometers.
Right.
Fairly deep, actually, deeper than I would have thought.
Mm-hmm.
Another ancient tsunami was the Storegga slide in Norway.
Storegga slide?
Yeah.
Is that a monster?
Sounds like
a
dinosaur.
It was
6,100.
Yeah, that cannonballed.
It generated a huge tsunami that washed through the North Atlantic Ocean, which hit Norway, Iceland, and the east coast of Scotland, where it reached a height of 21 meters. That would be about 65 or 70 feet. And it even washed over some of the Shetland Islands. So I guess that was before the ponies were there, because they just those ponies are not tsunami proof. They're so small.
Yeah, there's no such thing as pony paddling.
You don't know that either.
I suspect it.
My drowned pony, my drowned pony.
I like to stroke her matted hair.
And another note I've got is the Krakatoa eruption caused a tsunami that was 46 meters or 151 feet in height when it hit the town of Merak.
It's a good time. And that was just a pure volcano explosion. Like the island actually kind of blew up, right? If I remember correctly.
Yeah. They had a big Merak attack.
And as I'm sure everybody's aware, in 2004 in the Indian Ocean, there was a magnitude, it's either 9 or 9.1.
Yeah. I've even read somewhere where it said it might have gotten up to 9.3.
It's close enough for this podcast. Yeah. It's about a 9.
Yeah.
That's by the magnitude scale, momentum magnitude or magnitude momentum.
I don't know.
It was caused by an undersea megathrust earthquake. That's where one...
Undersea megathrust, that's where you get your girlfriend in the shower.
Also known as the bath bomb.
A megathrust earthquake is where one tectonic plate is forced underneath by another. So you've got these two plates rubbing, and then one all of a sudden shifts and goes underneath, and you have a massive displacement.
Are you sure we're not talking about me and my girlfriend in the shower?
I think we might be. It's probably pretty similar physics involved.
Yeah.
It occurred at pretty much 1 a.m. UTC, which is pretty much Greenwich Mean Time. So
you'll know you have it when the tiles on the shower fall off.
On Sunday, December 26, 2004, and it had an epicenter just off the west coast of Sumatra, Indonesia. The earthquake triggered a series of devastating tsunamis along the coasts of most landmasses bordering the Indian Ocean, killing over, as mentioned, 230,000 people in 14 countries and inundating coastal communities with waves up to 30 meters or almost 100 feet high. And it is one of the 10 deadliest natural disasters in recorded history. It's about number 7, depending on how much you estimate died here. Indonesia was the hardest hit country, followed by Sri Lanka, India, and Thailand.
Yeah, I mean, there's no end to videos and pictures and whatnot. I mean, I know I showed you guys before we started recording this, like, chilling photo from that disaster where there's just a you can see in the photo frame, like, 20 people running away from this wave that looks like it's about 25 feet high that's right on their heels. And you know, you're watching this knowing for a fact that somebody in that photo is now dead. Like, at least
I would say half
a handful of people who are in that photo did not survive.
Right.
Like, there's no way that they all walked away from this.
Yeah.
And it's, you know, you can, and there's like so much video of it and so many photos. It's, yeah, it's just horrible.
I've got a smaller kind of offshoot story, just an interesting little sidebar.
Okay.
The Queen of the Sea rail disaster in Sri Lanka, struck by the tsunami created by the Indian Ocean earthquake, this Queen of the Sea was caught in the rising waters. This is a train. At 9:30 a.m. in the village of Perelia, the beach was hit by the first of the huge waves thrown up by the earthquake. The train came to a halt as water surged around it. Hundreds of local people, believing the train to be secure on the rails, climbed on top of the train to avoid being swept away. Others stood behind it, hoping the train would take the force of the water. The wave caused flooding in the carriages and began to cause panic amongst the passengers. The next wave, by far the biggest of the entire day at over 18 feet, picked the train up, smashed it against the trees and houses which lined the track, crushing those seeking shelter behind it. The 8 carriages were so packed with people that the doors could not be opened. They filled with water, drowning almost everyone inside as the water washed over the wreckage several more times. 1,700 were killed, the greatest loss of life in railroad history.
Boo.
And the victims primarily in the 8 cars. So that's just a little slice.
Yeah, kind of give you a photo, a snapshot.
Like that
yeah.
would be, we're talking about a couple hundred feet of shoreline where there's a train.
Yeah.
And you can just imagine the devastation there. And then this happened everywhere.
Yeah.
That there's ocean front in the Indian Ocean that wasn't protected by some other thing in the way that already got hit. As a matter of fact, it even submerged some islands completely.
Yeah.
The island country of Maldives is actually only a few feet above sea level, but it has an outlying coral reef around it.
Mm-hmm.
The tsunami swept across it, and they were flooded, but they seem to have actually avoided most of the brunt because that reef did take a lot of the strength away from that tsunami. Yeah.
Is that spelled Maldives?
It might be Maldives. I thought it was Maldive.
It's probably pronounced Maldive, but spelt Maldives.
Apparently it's Maldives.
Yeah, I mean, I read one part in one article in the days after the disaster, because one thing that I'd forgotten was that it was the day after Christmas when this happened.
Boxing Day in Canada and England.
Yeah, and so it there were millions of vacationers in the region from, like, all over the world, like, you know, everyone's coming off of whatever Christmas celebrations they may have had wherever they were.
Yeah.
And then the day after this thing hits, and then there's so many people were killed in the initial impact, then dragged out to sea and drowned, and then washed back up on shore, and then, you know, subsequent waves. And there's stories about, you know, them having to go through all the devastated areas and collect the dead bodies.
Right.
Some of them are on, like, hanging in trees, and they don't have nearly enough aid workers, and so weeks go by with these bodies, like, suspended above the ground, that begin to rot, and then they worry about
disease.
Like
a pair of tennis shoes wrapped around an electrical wire.
Oh, right. God.
Thousands of corpses, as you noted, many hanging trees or washed up on beaches, immediately started to rot in the tropical heat.
Yeah, of course.
With no food or clean water and open wounds, the risk of famine and epidemic diseases was high, and health authorities feared that the death toll might double to 300,000 at the time.
Because this is in the southern hemisphere, and of course the seasons are reversed down there, so this is actually the absolute hottest time of the year in that region. So it's, you know, couldn't have been worse timing.
CBC has a documentary series called The Passionate Eye, mm-hmm. and they had an episode called Caught on Camera about the 2004 tsunami, and it's about an hour long. I'll link to it on the website, causticsodapodcast.com. It's amazing. It's got all sorts of live footage of people who were there and interviews with the survivors afterwards as well. Right. Most of them are vacationers, and there's a couple who lost their 5-year-old daughter. It's heart-wrenching. Like, before they had their daughter, they used to vacation in Sri Lanka and loved it. It was their place to go.
Right.
And then they had their daughter and thought, well, we can't take a baby to Sri Lanka, so we'll wait till she's at least 5, and then we'll go.
Because
so
this of all was the changelings.
That's right. So they thought, she's 5, let's go for Christmas.
Yeah.
So they go, and then this wave hits, and they're all together, unlike a lot of these stories. And as soon as it comes, the mother picks up her daughter, and she has her, you know, when if you're going to hold your daughter tight, she's got her legs wrapped around your waist, she's got her arms tight around your neck, and you're just clenching
her.
You
got your fingers in their ears.
Yeah, you are just...
like pincers.
You are holding on for dear life.
Yeah.
I mean, this is, I'm sure, a mother's strength. And that wave hit, and whoosh, she was gone. She got torn out of her grasp without even a struggle.
Yeah, well, it's the ocean. Right,
like you have fight the ocean.
You have little spindly human arms, and you're facing up
tons
against the
of water.
Ocean.
Yeah, and they never found her again.
Yeah, I'm sure.
How do you live with that?
I'm sure she's like Gilligan, and she's just camping out on some island, right? And she doesn't, you know how to get back, and she's not the professor, so she can't make a raft with a nuclear generator out of coconuts, and so they'll stumble upon her eventually.
Curiously enough, we might get to a related story in news about that.
Mm-hmm.
Not about this girl, though. She didn't make it.
Right.
There's another scene. If anybody wants to experience horrible,
horror.
Painful empathy.
And that's why you're here.
It is. So you kind of have to go watch this. It's near the end. I'd say about, there's 4 segments. I'd say about halfway through the 4th segment. There's a family that they've been covering. It's a father, his 2 daughters, I believe, and they have a 3rd daughter that they haven't found. They were all together. The 3rd daughter was out somewhere else. They finally meet up, except for this 3rd daughter. They go looking for her. They're, you know, looking through corpses. They're pulling up all sorts of wreckage. They're trying to figure out where she could be, where she could have washed to, where she could have gone if she was fine. They can't. And they finally, some of the authorities have set up just this massive poster board that just has photos of corpses on it.
Right.
But they have all the corpses they've collected. They take a picture and they put a photo up on the board.
Right.
And they're asking people to go and identify these bodies. So having nothing else to do. And the cameras are rolling. They are filming this family looking at a board of corpses for their daughter. And they find her.
No.
On camera.
Is it wrong of me that the movie producer in me goes, that makes for compelling television?
It really does. Like, it's not wrong of you,
mm-hmm.
I don't think.
Because that's the first thing that occurred to me right
but
there.
But it's horrible.
Like,
it's wrong of you.
That would...
And that's why you're here.
Well, Torin, you're not usually this judgmental.
I've been taking classes.
I think I would rather watch the little girl get sucked out to sea and die
than watch her family,
find out that she's dead. And it's horrible to say, but it was... I had to stop watching. Like, I finished later, but I had to take a break because that was so emotional to see that. And that's just one death.
Yeah.
There were at least 230,000 people killed by this tsunami.
Yeah.
So multiply that up by all their family members. You know, 1 million people crying about somebody they loved being just wiped away for no reason.
Yeah.
Horrible. A lot closer now, almost news, is, of course, the 2011 Sendai tsunami, or Tohoku.
Right, this is the Japanese one where the nuclear reactor got damaged and, you know, there was all that fallout and people didn't want to eat tuna and whatnot.
Right, this one was one of those, as mentioned, it was a 1 in 10,000 year occurrence. There's a great NHK documentary, which is basically the Japanese Broadcasting Corporation, called Surviving the Tsunami, and it talks with a bunch of people who were there. And a lot of them, what's really interesting is they interview them and they go back to where the tsunami happened and they're describing what they did. Like one woman was caught in her car and then the car got pushed into a place and then got stuck there and she crawled out and went somewhere else. And while they're doing this, they show you the footage of other people on the hill filming her after she just got out of her car, right, like during the tsunami.
And oh, so you get like the, you get the first narration. Person.
You get her story, but then you get to see what she did.
She was actually talking about.
And just.
That's crazy.
You just see people who just get swept away.
Yeah.
They're just gone. Whoosh.
There's totally catch them in their lies. And then I lifted up this car to rescue this baby. No, you didn't.
Shows here you found a hydraulic jack. So just. Astounding footage.
And some of the footage from the 2011 one is that like really struck me at the time while I was watching it on the news, like as it was happening or just after it happened, was those they had those like giant car lots that were full of cars, like right. brand new cars that got wiped out. And all of a sudden these cars are going down the street pinballing and you see people running from these cars that yep. are kind of tumbling yep. towards them. You're like, oh, the wave doesn't necessarily have to get you.
Right.
The debris can get you.
The wave's a bastard. It can pick up cars and hit you with it.
Yeah.
Like, you're a jerk. You're already strong enough. Stop it.
The wave is like the Incredible Hulk?
One of the little stories that I thought was very caustic out of this was a man named Tsuyoshi Sawada. Mm-hmm. He was stuck in his car when the tsunami hit, and they interview him, so you know he survives.
Yeah.
But he very honestly says, I lost all hope of survival. I had decided I was going to die.
Mm-hmm.
But then I thought, if I stay in my car, they'll never find my corpse. So I'm going to get out and stand on top of my car. So my body will be washed away somewhere where somebody can find it.
Right.
He gave up. But because he stood on top of his car to just, okay, take me and die, he then saw somebody on a bridge nearby and shouted for help.
And they got him.
And the guy said, jump, I'll catch you, and I'll bring you onto the... I'm not sure what the details were, because it was something about jumping down onto the bridge, but this guy was in his car.
Maybe the water was high enough that he was kind of
I don't
like...
know, but then why wouldn't have been over the bridge?
Yeah.
But basically, this guy got him up to the bridge, or down to the bridge, or to safety on yeah. the bridge with him, and he ended up surviving.
One of my very caustic stories from one of my favorite websites of all time, badassoftheweek.com.
Mm-hmm.
And way back when in... you know, early 2011 when it was going on, one of the stories that kind of trickled out and the guy who runs that website told his story was about this guy who got hit by it and his mother and his wife were trapped like in their home. And so he was a diver. So he went and got his right. diving gear
yes.
and like swam out in the flood right. flood water with all the debris that we were talking about and cars tumbling and whatever
yeah.
and actually performed underwater rescues.
Yeah.
And he got his wife out and then he got his mother out and then he kept going back like nonstop for like 4 or 5 days and pulling people out of the water,
right, right.
saving them from where they were trapped and in his scuba gear. And
amazing.
So, yeah, I forget what his name was, but he's on, you can go back into the archives of badassoftheweek.com and find this guy's story. It was quite compelling.
Totally. I'll put the link up for that. Ha ha ha! December 23rd, 2011.
Ooh, incredibly recent news.
A woman named Yuznidar, and I found out that many Indonesians go by just one name. So, as far as I know, she doesn't have a last one or doesn't go by okay. Yuznidar.
She's like Madonna.
I guess so,
or
yeah.
Or Cher.
Fair enough. I think if you want to be called by one name, you can be called by one mm-hmm. name. It's up to you. Had last seen her daughter when she was ripped from her grasp by the powerful lave that slammed into Aceh, killing a total of 230,000 people. This would be the 2004 tsunami that we were just talking about.
Okay.
Yuznidar had been trying to get her three children to safety when the tsunami triggered by a huge earthquake hit. She lost Marie Yuranda and her eldest daughter, who remains missing in the chaos. Not long after the wave hit, Mary was found and adopted by a woman, and adopted is in quotes.
Right, okay.
Who forced her
to
beg.
Maybe I was hoping for.
No, maybe she thought it was...
Thank you, God of Tsunamis.
Yeah, or it was Moses or something. Oh, this person will grow up to be the Messiah.
That's right.
Lead my people out of the promised land.
More like this person will grow up to beg on the streets for me.
Mm-hmm.
She forced her to beg in the streets, sometimes until 1 a.m. So get out there and beg. Don't come back till you have the right amount of money, I guess.
Mm.
7 years later, she finally stopped bringing in money. I guess she got so old that people said, come on, you're 15, begging on the streets. You're not cute anymore.
Yeah, it's prostitution or nothing.
Yeah. The girl, who is now named Wati, got kicked out by the woman. And she, on her own, decided to find her family. But she was 8 years old when she got lost.
No idea where she was from or who her parents were.
The only thing she could remember was the name of her grandfather, Ibrahim. So she went to the town that she was from, went to a cafe, and a man in the cafe tracked down a man with the name Ibrahim, who quickly summoned his daughter who they were hoping was her mother.
Yeah.
And it was. 7 years later. Her daughter got swept
crazy.
Out to sea by a tsunami.
Well,
7 years later.
Her two daughters got swept out to sea.
Did. Yeah.
One didn't make it.
7 years later, one of them shows up in a cafe. Hi, Mom. It's me. And she said, when I saw my mother, I knew it was her. I just knew it. When I first saw this, I was being a skeptic.
Yeah.
I was a little skeptical. I'm like, really? A street person begging the streets decides to show up and go, I'm your daughter.
All right.
However, the mother has said the birthmarks on her belly and a mole and a scar on her face prove that the little girl was mine.
Oh,
that washed away my skepticism.
Yeah, no kidding.
That there's no doubt.
Did they ever find her hat?
I have no information on that. My guess is no. Many, many hats were lost.
Did they go back to the lady that quote-unquote adopted her and slapped her around a bit?
I don't believe so, but in my heart they did.
Yeah. This is dated from March 28th, 2011, so a little bit further in the past, but still recent past. And this is about the 2011 tsunami in Japan. There was a city called Ishinomaki City in Japan, and they have a part of their city which has been overrun by cats, due largely to the fact that there's a population, a certain sector of the population that believes these cats are good luck, and so they feed them and like let them reproduce and don't cull the herd and all the rest of this stuff.
Do they call it a Munami?
So this part of the city is known as Cat Island. And essentially, it's an island on the island that houses about 100 elderly people. Many of whom believe that feeding cats will bring great wealth and good luck.
Naturally. They're filled with gold.
Well, if bad luck is brought by rats, then there's some truth to that.
Yeah, so there's they estimate there are thousands of stray cats on quote-unquote Cat Island, and no dogs are allowed anywhere nearby. So it appears that feeding all these cats has finally paid off for some of the inhabitants, because not a single one of them was hurt.
They formed a break wall against the wave. Or maybe the cats absorbed the brunt of the tsunami.
Maybe they're all those like extra fluffy cats and they acted like sponges. just sucked all the water up.
There's nothing more funny than a wet cat.
The governments are going to have to start installing cats along shorelines as anti-tsunami devices. Just big walls of furry cuteness.
Unfortunately, inhabitants of the island, both human and feline, are extremely short on food. So Japan's Earthquake Animal Rescue and Support Organization posted a notice on Facebook asking for people to donate cat food.
Sure.
To help out with all the stray cats that, you know, are not getting...
Well, I'm sure not all the cats survived, so there's some dead cats lying around that they could eat.
Are cats cannibalistic? Are they really?
They're hungry enough.
I guess so.
Just like people.
I guess a human, if it's hungry enough, could you have a cat, too?
I would think they're opportunistically cannibalistic. I don't think a cat would ever... Well, unless it went in crazy. But generally, I don't think a cat would decide to kill another cat and eat it.
Yeah, so the name of the area that's all, the colloquially known as Cat Island is Tashirojima. A volunteer looked into transporting food to the area by boat, but there's simply too much debris in the water, and a helicopter is on the way. They got a helicopter food in for cats.
Look, I like animals. I love my dog. But when people are suffering, animals, you...
Like, seriously, honestly, if you're a human being that hasn't had, like, fresh food in, like, a couple of weeks, you'd take that tin of cat food, too.
Yeah, exactly.
Right. I would give that tin of cat food to a person over a cat any day of the week.
Is it chicken or beef?
Tuna.
I don't know, man. Is that the lesser of two evils?
I got another in the news item.
Oh, this one. Go.
Joe's a big fan of this article. There's a show on National Geographic Channel, a special they did about the lost city of Atlantis.
Oh, they're just going down the TLC path of truth, whatever.
Yeah. Well, you know.
What does it have to do with tsunamis?
Well, evidently they found a lost city just off the coast of Spain.
Uh-huh.
And they're dubbing it.
The tsunami washed it up?
Yeah. No, a tsunami, they know because all the geological factors that we talked about before and the sediment and whatnot, that a tsunami wiped it out a couple of thousand years ago.
Oh, I see.
So it's a very, very old city that was wiped out by a tsunami and remains submerged. But Joe seems to think, skeptically, he's such a cynic.
That Aquaman didn't live there?
That he actually believes that...
What about Namor?
Perhaps the scientist who found this, you know, may have partnered up with the producers of the TV show and dubbed it The Lost City of Atlantis simply, cynically, to get viewers.
That's
as
exactly
opposed
right.
to any scientific fact behind their claim.
Atlantis is legendary. It was a thought experiment by Plato. Plato invented the idea of Atlantis. I have no doubt that they found a washed away Atlantic-based city. That one could then go, let's call this Atlantis. But that's a lot different from telling people, we found the lost city of Atlantis.
Well, maybe Plato used to vacation at this place, and he wrote about it simply as like an actual report of what happened.
Cannot deny that that is possible. However, it is highly unlikely.
Would you have liked it better if they called it Atlantopolis?
That would be fine. It would be, because when you start saying it's Atlantis, you start hinting at all the woo-woo BS that's built up around this legend, right? And if you're a scientist, if you're trying to stick to what you know based on the evidence, you have to stop bringing up legendary lost cities that people claim have magical, super-advanced science.
But how else are they going to get their grants renewed?
Exactly. It's the sad truth.
They actually have an aerial photo, a satellite imaging of the actual area that is submerged, but there's obviously a land pattern, some man-made kind of construct with concentric circles. I mean, it certainly looks like they found something of consequence, so we could maybe post this aerial photo on the website.
Pop culture. I forced myself to watch 2012.
Oh, you're a brave man.
I've seen it.
I've seen it too.
It was okay.
Horrible. It was horrible. Yeah. Just jump to the chase. Don't beat around the bush. Well, it was terrible.
It's hard for me to be so over the top hating of it after seeing Little Nicky.
Roland Emmerich, I know you listen to the podcast. If we're ever to meet, I'm going to punch you in the balls.
What was the worst part about it?
My least favorite part of 2012 was when he drove the limo up the cracking pavement through the collapsing building jumped it out the far side and landed safe.
Yeah, it was a video game car. It wasn't a real car. It was a video game car that could bounce off of everything with minor damage and continue to work just fine.
Right.
Also, him surviving had not, he got a little bit of early warning. So he's oh my God, I got to get my kids and wife and her new husband and stuff.
But it had Woody Harrelson as the kooky.
He was okay as the crazy guy. It was a little over the top. But this,
end of the world.
Yeah. Who happened to be... He was obviously completely out of his mind, but this one instance he happened to be right.
The only part of drama that I remember that was this is actually, kind of dramatic, is that they may not get on the giant arcs at the end.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But whether or not I knew that they were... There's no chance that anyone would be hurt or lost throughout the first, half or three quarters
Nobody
of the
important. Yeah. And my main complaint about it was that the action was so sanitized that it was meaningless. Mm-hmm.
But that's a Roland Emmerich hallmark.
Right.
He does that in all his
movies. It's disaster porn.
Yeah.
And I mean that in that it has no art to it. It has no emotional impact. It is just
There's no human cost.
There is human cost, but they don't show you.
In only the most abstract sense.
Exactly. Oh, look at this city getting wrecked by a wave. In my head, I'm like, millions of people are dying on camera right now, but all I'm looking at is an amazingly cool picture of a giant wave.
Yeah, and Roland Emmerich understands that were he to show all that tragedy, that people would be devastated and they wouldn't just watch the spectacle and go, ooh.
Right.
He is doing more to undermine the filmmaking process than anybody else that I can think of. This is a perfect segue into The Day After Tomorrow, another Roland Emmerich movie.
Yeah, also completely artistically empty.
Now, this one specifically has, 2012 had tsunamis as a result of all the things that were happening, the fact the whole Earth was kind of crumbling. This specifically has a tsunami scene where a giant, 500-foot wave takes out Manhattan.
Yeah.
And, I think we watched it right before we started recording, and I think one of the things that you correctly point out is that every time you're about to see a human cost, they cut away to the giant wide shot, so you don't actually have to watch, 20,000 people get killed in a horrible fashion.
Yeah, which if you don't do that, then the disaster doesn't mean anything.
Yeah.
What I've realized that the movie industry does not have and needs, it needs disaster horror movies. It needs horror movies where the horror is the disaster, meaning that you can go full over the top and show the awful devastation and destruction from, say, a tsunami or an earthquake or whatever, in the same way that a horror movie would, but frame it as a disaster movie and go after that horror audience, but show them massive scale disaster movie horror, right? Make it rated R.
Can you be stalked by a tsunami, though?
You could make a movie where
you
could
walk slowly backwards towards a tsunami.
what would the theme music be? Would it be whoosh,
whoosh, whoosh, whoosh? Could be some kind of, let's say, it's water spirits causing tsunami that are killing people along the coastline. Mm-hmm. You could do that, add in some magic to it. But what I'm saying, though, is even if you just did it as a standard disaster movie, but then decided that the reason you're allowed to show the awful human cost is because you're making it a horror movie.
Right.
I think that, because it's not that you can't make these movies and show them realistically, it's just that you have to convince the guy with the money that there's a reason to do it. So I think you could convince the guy with the money, hey, nobody's made disaster horror movies. We need to make one.
Yeah.
So Hollywood, take
this
idea.
Put your thinking cap on.
Somebody needs to make a disaster horror movie. Start relatively small. Doesn't have to be, because of CGI, it doesn't have to be a huge budget.
One of the appeals of horror movies is that they're incredibly low budget. You don't need stars, blah, blah, blah. It's all premise, right?
Right. And do the same, but add the horror in and make it a carnal spectacle. Right.
Yeah.
Going from these two terrible, artless, no emotional cost, uncaring movies, I decided to watch Hereafter. I'd heard from several people that it was a pretty good movie.
I hadn't heard about the opening sequence was right. Tsunami, but I hadn't seen the movie.
I don't want to spoil too much because it's a decent movie.
When did it come out?
It was a 2010 movie. It was actually directed by Clint Eastwood.
Yeah. Starring Matt Damon.
Okay, well, I'll spoil the general stuff.
The first,
especially because
the
tsunami happens right in the first 5 minutes. And actually, the tsunami scene is on YouTube, so we're going to include it on the show notes for this episode, causticsodapodcast.com. In those first 5 minutes, the tsunami hits, and it is more emotionally impactful and more engaging in that first 5 minutes than the entirety of both The Day After Tomorrow and 2012.
Oh.
And any 5 minutes of 2012 is inferior to that 5 minutes
How
of
so?
Hereafter.
Well, it's hard to get... I mean, I certainly don't doubt that claim because it's hard to get any worse.
Because as this wave is coming in, there are shots that are showing people being swallowed up by... being flung around like rag dolls, being hit by vehicles that are being pushed around. You are seeing... And it's not... It doesn't have to be close up. There's no brain splattering or completely twisted
but
bodies.
But it's an actual human cost.
But
like, you see people get hit by tumbling cars.
And, yeah. You know. You see it, and you go, "Oh my, this is horrible."
Do they show the aftermath?
Well, sort of. They show it rushing in. They show one of the main characters getting swallowed up by it, being completely
lost.
Lost. Well, the sea has come in, so she's still in the middle of the street.
Yeah.
And there's cars rushing past her. She gets trapped by a big hunk of metal that's got tangled up in her clothes. She swims to the surface. More stuff goes by. She gets hit. She gets knocked out. And this is all just a setup for the actual movie. There's after this first 5 minutes, there's no more tsunami.
Mm-hmm.
And what the movie's actually about is these people who have experienced near-death situations and become what you would call a psychic medium,
mm-hmm.
can talk to the dead
for
real. And it becomes a very... Well, they do have some skeptical stuff to it, in that most people who claim to talk to the dead in the movie are full of crap.
Right, but like, there are a couple legit.
But there are these few people who've had these near-death experiences, Matt Damon's character and Kathleen Kennedy's character, who have these near-death experiences and become psychic mediums and can see the dead and hear from them and things like that.
Yeah.
That part of the movie, pretty good.
Right.
It's not a bad movie. I'd give it about a 6 or a 7 out of 10, I suppose. Probably a 6.
But an outstanding tsunami sequence.
But that tsunami sequence was, it's what you want from a horrible natural disaster.
Yeah.
And after having seen, I had just watched 2012 the day before. It was just, I was thankful.
It was night and day.
Yeah, it really was.
I want to talk about Ponyo.
Okay.
All right.
Ponyo.
I've heard of the movie, but I have not seen it.
2008. Of course, it's Studio Ghibli. Written and directed by Hayao Miyazaki,
mm-hmm.
as you mm-hmm. recall from Spirited Away and other...
Princess
Mononoke. The plot centers on a goldfish named Ponyo who befriends a 5-year-old human boy, Sosuke, and wants to become a human girl.
Oh, okay.
Okay.
So very little mermaid-y.
Mm-hmm.
Ponyo, with the help of her sisters, breaks away from her father, and these all the ocean characters are kind of these... They're humanoid, but they're magical.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
They all have magical powers and mm-hmm. transform and whatnot.
So in order to live under the sea, imagine that?
Yeah, and they have crazy little devices. It's very Miyazaki fantasy-ish.
Mm-hmm.
So it's kind of a bit of a...
Wonderful magical fantasy world where things don't work the way you think they do,
Breaks away from her father and releases his magic to make herself human. The huge amount of magic released into the ocean causes an imbalance in the world, resulting in a huge tsunami.
That is a lot of magic.
Yeah, it is. Riding on the waves of the storm, Ponyo goes back to visit Sasuke, and then it's really cool because, well, of course it's animated beautifully
mm-hmm.
in the way that Ghibli stuff usually is.
Yeah,
and the movie starts off good, and it gets better. You really get sucked into it, and there's lots of cool. There's a prehistoric fish swimming around after the tsunami, and it's just very magical and cool.
Right.
I've heard good things. I really want to see it. I do like most Miyazaki that I've seen.
You know, he had that period when he was doing Nausicaa and all that stuff that I really like. And then he kind of, after Spirited Away, kind of like...
Yeah, Spirited Away was pretty captivating.
Yeah, after that it got kind of hit and miss, but Ponyo was a hit.
All right, good times. Thumbs up.
The Abyss has a director's cut. And in that director's cut, there is a tsunami.
Oh, really?
Right, it kind of passes over them, though, because they're all underwater.
No, the aliens...
Yeah.
Spoiler alert!
If you haven't seen Abyss by now.
Yeah, but the aliens... create the tsunami And it's basically a giant wave that's hovering above the city. They just stop it there.
Oh. Okay.
And they go to Ed Harris's character and are complaining of that the humans are ruining the earth.
All right.
They kind of show him images in the water of, you know, dictators and nuclear war and all this other stuff. Yeah. And so I guess he has to talk. I haven't actually seen it, but I've seen bits of it on the internet.
Yeah.
Right.
And it looks great. And it's apparently like a half an hour of extra footage.
Well, the movie was already ridiculously long.
Yeah, this one was going to take it up to 3 hours.
Yeah, easy, if not more.
And at the end, you know, they obviously they take back their tsunami.
James Cameron, clocks are for other people, right?
The crew frequently spend enough time underwater to force them to undergo decompression before surfacing.
Oh, really?
James Cameron would often watch dailies through a glass window while decompressing and hanging upside down to relieve the stress on his shoulders from the weight of the helmet.
Oh, nice.
Of course, we discussed in another episode, I can't remember which one, about fluid breathing being a reality.
Yeah, we did talk about that.
5 rats were used for 5 different takes, all of whom survived and were given shots by a vet. The rat that actually appeared in the end or in the film died of natural causes a few weeks before the film opened.
Oh.
During underwater filming, Ed Harris almost drowned.
Oh, really?
While filming a scene where he had to hold his own breath at the bottom of a submerged set, Harris ran out of air and gave the signal for oxygen. Harris's safety diver got hung up on a cable and could not get to him. Another crew member gave Harris a regular, but it was upside down.
Oh, God.
Caused him to suck in water.
Oh. I didn't know they worked that way. I would die. I would die.
That's when you get your 5 minutes of training.
Yeah. Okay.
A cameraman came over, ripped the upside down regulator, and gave him one in the correct orientation. During the rigorous and problematic shoot, the cast and crew began calling the film by various derogatory names such as Son of Abyss.
That's my favorite so far.
The Abuse.
Okay.
The Abuse, yeah.
Life's Abyss and Then You Die.
Okay. New favorite.
Mary Elizabeth Mastrantonio reportedly suffered a physical and emotional breakdown because she was pushed so hard on the set, and Ed Harris had to pull over his car at one time while driving home because he burst into spontaneous crying.
Okay, but that happens on every single James Cameron movie, so
sure.
There's nothing special about that.
Well, I remember that hearing that the cast or the cast and crew of Terminator 2 got T-shirts made up for their rap party that said T3, not for me.
Oh, nice.
Because he's such a pain in the ass to work with.
Yeah, well, James Cameron's quite famously difficult to work with, but he's quite the dictator.
For financial reasons, the Deep Core set was never dismantled. It stands in an abandoned and drained South Carolina nuclear power plant where the film was shot. 20th Century Fox has posted signs around the set informing potential photographers that Fox still owns the set and the designs, and that any photographs or video shooting on the set is prohibited by copyright law.
I don't think that's true.
South Carolinians,
give us a heads up. Yeah.
And then lastly, the water in the 2 tanks was chlorinated heavily to prevent microbes growing in it. This caused many of the actors' hair to become green and even white.
That's awesome. There's a transformer called Tidal Wave.
Oh, really?
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, it in fact
sounds more like a G.I. Joe character than a Transformers character with a name like Tidal Wave.
I don't remember the Transformers character Tidal Wave, but I thought you might. In Japan, it was called Shockwave, but the U.S. name was Tidal Wave. Tidal Wave was a gigantic transformer who won a massive victory for the Decepticons on the planet Devola.
Oh, yes.
Before being summoned to Earth by Thrust.
Mm-hmm.
Possessing great strength and massive size, his brain power was much less pronounced and was known for droningly repeating his own name, usually in the form of Tidal Wave, and referring to himself in the third person. He had the ability to combine with Megatron to give his master a more powerful form known as Burning Megatron.
that doesn't sound like a good thing.
And could
put some ointment on that.
Into 3 small ships called the Dark Fleet.
Oh,
but
this is complicated.
His main alternate mode was a massive aircraft carrier.
Now, did he, like the early Transformers, the Generation 1 Transformers, have like a power? And did that power involve?
I don't think so. I think this is from the era when they were trying to create those massive robots. You'd have to buy 3 different Transformers to build 1 giant mega robot.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So I'm sure the fact that he split into 3 ships, you'd have to buy 3 different action figures and put them together to make Tidal Wave.
I protest.
There was a video game it was due to be released like 8 days after the 2011 tsunami in Japan.
Uh-oh.
And so...
Called Tsunami Death Toll. Well,
no, it wasn't because the game release was delayed. And when I first read this article, I was like, oh, well, maybe the game design place or the factory where they were making the game
was
or something
washed away.
Was washed away in Sendai. But it's actually because the game featured a character that had the ability to create earthquakes and tidal waves.
Uh-oh.
And they thought it might be insensitive to release that game.
Right next to the guy whose name was Faulty Nuclear Reactor.
Yeah.
It was called Unlimited Cruise.
Yeah, it's like it seems to be like a series of like anime, manga, video game, like all kind of intertwined.
Mm-hmm.
But it's all like sort of ocean based. Like the characters look like they're all dressed like pirates, and actual logo has a skull and crossbones in it and stuff like this. So it would make sense that you would have a character that, you know, could at least create tidal waves.
If you're
going to
delay the release of your game. Because you have a tsunami reference in it, then the ocean has already won.
Caustic Soda was recorded by Mike Leeson while he was receiving maggot therapy. To comment on episodes, make a donation, see show notes, links, and videos, visit causticsodapodcast.com. Rate and review us on iTunes. Visit us on Facebook. Email us at info@causticsodapodcast.com.